I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend? Or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back. Hour two of Grant and Danny underway on 106.7 The Fan. Mark Maskey covers the NFL for the Washington Post, covered the NFL, including the Redskins, dating back to 1998. And it's his reporting with a guest we had on yesterday, Liz Clark and Les Carpenter, that gives us the information now that three of the Redskins minority owners want out of their stakes in the team. And Mark joins us on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. First of all, great to have you back on the show. Thanks for joining us. I guess let's start, before we get into the ownership part of this, with the name change. I mean, you were covering the Redskins 22 years ago and have ever since. Are you surprised after so little movement for so long with how quick this is all happening this week?
Yes and no, Grant. I mean, you know, anyone who's been around the team for the amount of time that you and I have, I'm not the only old one here. But I mean, you know, you sort of get that mindset, well, this is never going to happen, this is never going to change, you know, Dan Snyder's quote about all caps, you know, you just sort of have that ingrained into you that no matter what the calls are from the outside, this is simply not going to happen. But I think when you look at it sort of in the broader context of what's happening in the country, and that permeated into what's happening in the NFL, and then certain that permeated into what's happening with the Redskins, I don't think you can consider it surprising in that context. There are so many, you know, institutions, names, monuments, et cetera, in the entire country that were allowed to stand for a long time in the country now, in the post-George Floyd reaction and unrest in this country and change. Those things are not allowed to stand anymore. We saw that come to the NFL with Roger Goodell's video on Black Lives Matter, and then sort of the renewed push to have Colin Kaepernick signed by a team, whether that's successful or not, we'll see. And then the Redskins name change. Again, you know, I think Roger Goodell and the NFL are trying to get themselves on the right side of history on some things. Maybe we can sort of go back and forth about, you know, are the motivations pure? Is the NFL trying to get on the right side of history because it's the right thing to do or because it's good for business? But regardless of what the motivation is, I think that effort certainly is there now. And so therefore, you know, all of the reasons that the Redskins name was allowed to remain unchanged for so long, they no longer apply. They're not valid in the current state of the country, in the current state of the NFL. And so I think from that perspective, you have to look at it and say, no, it's not surprising at all in this moment in time where so many things are changing, that this is something that will change also.
Mark, I put the context of the 2013 quote to USA Today and what's happening now in kind of my same lens. And what I mean is, what's best for business? What's best for business then was him to throw some red meat to his fans and say what he said. What's best for business now seems to be a different thing. So, of course, he's changing with the times. So to me, the thing that's so stunning about this, with the maybe the possibility of RFK opening up again to them and that kind of being the dream site and having multiple municipalities bid for their services when it comes to a stadium, et cetera, I think it's the story with the Redskins are the three minority owners wanting out now on the precipice of this change. I think that is the story. Go into that. Give us as much detail as you can. I think that's stunning.
Well, you know, these stories came out at the same time. I don't think it's not a causation. It's not that the Redskins name was the only issue in terms of the ownership. And I think people are linking them together. And yes, they are linked somewhat, but I don't think they're linked at 100%. But a lot of people in their minds are linking them 100% because they happen to come out. That's just, you know, when we happen to find out about it, that the timing was like that. And yes, I think for Fred Smith, the name change was an issue. Like when you talk to people, Fred Smith for some time had been urging Dan Snyder to change the name. And then when we saw FedEx go public with the fact that they had urged the Redskins to change the name, that sort of underscored that. But I think there's a myriad of issues for the three minority owners as a whole. I think, you know, that there's just a dissatisfaction with being in business partnership with Dan Snyder and where that this relationship over 17 years has run its course. That it's simply time for it to end. And, you know, we won't necessarily see a quick resolution to this. I mean, things don't work that quickly. This is going to be one of those stories where everyone's going to give it a lot of attention now. And then, you know, for most fans, for most listeners, for most readers, it's probably going to fade into the background for a while. It's not something that's going to be out in front of them in terms of the operation of the team every single day from now until whenever it's resolved for them. It will probably go away for a while. And then if and when there is the resolution, they'll say, oh, yeah, I remember back when everyone was talking about that. So, yeah, I think those two issues, the name change and the ownership issues, are somewhat linked together, but they're not totally linked together. This was something that was percolating, brewing, developing for a very long time, this dissatisfaction. And now it just has happened to be out there in front of everyone because it was found out about, you know, at the same time as the name change.
Mark Maskey of the Washington Post. Do you think there is any legitimacy to the idea, and I've heard this more and more the last couple of days, that Dan Snyder would at some point consider selling? You know, whether it's the name changing, which he doesn't want to happen, the minority owners and 40% up for grabs now. Do you buy that at all?
I'll put it this way. I don't think we have any evidence right now that leads us to say that that's going to happen. Now, you know, it also sort of falls under the category, is the team for sale? Well, you know, anything is for sale if someone comes along and offers the right price. I mean, I assume there's a price at which Dan Snyder couldn't say no if someone were going to come along and answer it. But in terms of his intentions, I've never thought it was his intention to sell the team. I don't think it's his intention now. I think his intention has always been to own the team for the rest of his life and then pass it along to his family. I think we have every indication right now that remains his intention. Are there some people in the NFL who would like to see it sold? Sure. But that's remained the case for some time. But as you look forward now, some things get settled and solved for Dan Snyder now. The name change, whether it's what he wanted or not, that resolves an issue. It probably resolves an issue for any potential investors who might want to come in and buy the 40% of the team currently owned by the three minority owners. It probably makes them easier to sell and maybe resolves that issue. It possibly resolves the RFK Stadium site issue. So there also is a feeling within the league that the name change might settle things down in Washington, make things a little bit easier for Dan Snyder, and things may be different going forward. Now, obviously, that remains to be seen. But in terms of your original question, you know, again, I don't think we have any evidence of anything we've seen or heard to make us believe that Dan Snyder wants to sell the team or will sell the team.
Mark Maskey with the Washington Post is with us here on Grant and Danny. Mark, I like Ron Rivera a lot. I'm glad he's the head coach. I think he's, by all accounts, an honorable, really good man with a lot of integrity and a lot of smarts. And I'm glad he's in charge of a lot of stuff here. Do you see it as a little bit, I don't know, strange is the right word, but kind of remarkable that without having held a formal practice or a training camp or you know, coached a game, he's kind of the lead point person on all of this stuff? Isn't that kind of amazing to you?
I mean, I think it falls under the be careful what you ask for. I mean, Ron Rivera right. wanted a lot of power, and he got it. Now, I'm not sure he had in his mind that it was going to be a lot of power beyond the football operation. I think, you know, when a coach comes in and says he wants the power, he says that because he wants to be in charge of the football operation, he wants to make the personnel decisions, he wants to form the roster. And you know, that's what happened, obviously. But now he's come in at this time where there's this sort of void at the top of the organization below Dan Snyder, with Bruce Allen no longer there, with no one selected as a team president. I think some people thought that Eric Schaefer would have a very large role in the front office, something like that, but that didn't work out. He's no longer around. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's a lot that Ron Rivera has on his plate right now. I don't know if ultimately that's something that he really wanted or not. I don't know if ultimately it's something that's really going to work out very well in terms of if and when you get into a football season and he has all these football issues to take care of, if he's going to want to or have the time to address these other issues. But that's just sort of this particular point in time in the franchise and in the team, and with what the, you know, the current structure of the front office is and who's there and who is not, it falls to Ron Rivera, be for lack of anyone else being there to do it.
Mark Maskey, read his work in the Washington Post. We always love getting you on the show. Thanks so much. I know it's been a busy few days, not only with the news in D.C., but the Mahomes contract. We much appreciate it.
Thanks, Thomas.
Thanks, Mark.
Be well. Grant and Danny on the Fan at the bottom of the hour in about 17 minutes. Redskins historian Mike Richmond joins us. I want to talk with him about the beginning of the team name Redskins and go back through the years as to whether there were any moments where it looked like the name was going to change and it didn't. Next, right here on G&D, let's get into the Nats schedule being released and the fact that Major League Baseball is in a bad way right now. I mean, they might have several stars walking away in the next 48 hours if they can't get their act together. You're listening to The Fan. Thanks to Juan Romero for that update and the breaking news right here on The Fan. Welcome back, Grant and Danny. The Wizards making it official that Bradley Beal will not participate in the NBA restart in Orlando. We heard yesterday he would fly to Orlando and he would consider when he got there how he felt about the situation and whether or not he would play. I didn't realize that this shoulder injury was why he may not play. I mean, to me,
I didn't either.
We'd heard him talking a lot about whether or not he'd felt safe in COVID-19 and the Orlando restart and whether or not they'd be able to keep all the players healthy. But the Wizards announcement here very clearly states that Bradley Beal's not going to participate. And in that first sentence, due to a right rotator cuff injury, the decision was made in full consultation with Chief of Athlete Care and Performance Daniel Medina, the Wizards operation and orthopedist doctor as well in on this decision. The quote they gave, Bradley did everything possible to be ready to play, but after closely monitoring his individual workouts, we came to the conclusion that it was best for him to sit out the upcoming games in Orlando, end quote. Look, I don't know anything about the injury, so I'm not going to knock the decision based on the shoulder, but there was a lot of other things at play here that we thought may lead to him not participating too, right?
Yeah, I'm embarrassed. I didn't really know about the extent of that thing. I thought that was a nothing burger, but it sounds like it's significant enough. I mean, here's the deal. I bet you if this was the actual playoffs, or I bet you if this was a slightly different set of circumstances, he would play. But when you mix all the ingredients together, the uncertainty, the cases in Florida spiking, this uncertainty with the bubble and testing and preventative measures and how effective everything is going to be, if you're on the fence and you're that important to the franchise, which Bradley Beal is, I got no problem with pulling the ripcord. I none at all. 0.0. You're not going to get me to be upset. Some people might, and you know, the Dan Dockages of the world will give you some tough guy TED talk, and that's all well and good. But if there was any kind of extra risk to go with already the huge amount of opt-in risk that was on the table for a team that, you know, shouldn't really be in the playoffs and is in a rebuilding phase as they await the return of John Wall, their two stars, their backcourt mates are integral to this organization and where they're going to go from here over the next several years, I got no problem with this.
I think we've known for several weeks that it was unlikely that he was going to play, but you didn't know it had anything to do with this shoulder. And I don't know how much that changes the story, right? Whether he didn't report to Orlando because it's 8 fairly useless games and he's running his body into the ground for very little return, or It's that he had fears of getting C-19, or it's the young kids in his family, whatever the reason. I think we've kind of prepared ourselves for the Wizards playing without Beal. So now you've got no Davis Bertans and no John Wall, as you said, no Bradley Beal. They've actually got a chance maybe to catch Brooklyn, because the Nets, believe it or not, are probably, you know, pre the Beal news especially, worse off as far as who they're going to be rostering in Orlando to try to hold the Wizards off in the Eastern Conference. But this might be the blow that does them in. And look, like you, I've kind of scanned the 8 games they're going to play, and it's got a chance to be fun, and I'll watch some of it because it's sports. But in the grand scheme of things, as you said, how important are these 8 games to this organization? And if you're Bradley Beal, is it really worth the risk now on July 7th if you were to suffer some type of fairly serious injury? Or maybe let's just use the shoulder as an example. If you're setting your shoulder back and you need some type of procedure, or you've got to go weeks into the offseason where you can't train, if the season starts on time, which is still possible, I guess, I mean, we're creeping up on training camp just around the corner.
Yeah, it's not that far down the line. So, yeah, I think it's smart. And the way that I looked at it was, for me, just as a fan, I wanted to see Bradley Beal, right? The same way I wanted to see Ryan Zimmerman on the baseball field for the Nationals, right? But when you look at the big picture of things, what's the best thing for the organization? It's probably not playing him 40 minutes a night, which is what Scott Brooks would do down there. Basically just run him into the ground to try to squeeze out that 8th playoff seed, right? Hoping that Brooklyn
tumbles.
But would
he have to? Couldn't Brooks be on the same page as Shepard and they say, hey, Beal's going to go, but we're gonna cap him at 20 or so minutes, get him a little work, get him a sweat, get him on the bench? I mean, would he have to grind him to a pulp?
No, that's a good point. But I just, you know, competitive juices start flowing and things happen. I mean, I watched it, you know, last year, a team that was going nowhere, Beal playing the most minutes of anybody in the sport, and Brooks basically explaining, well, he doesn't practice that hard. We give him a lot of rest in practice, and that's why he plays the most minutes of anybody. And there are hard minutes, too, by the way, at both ends, although sometimes the defense was a bit lax. But he's asked to be playmaker, shooter, scorer, assister, you know, running marathons on the offensive end, going around screens and stuff. So you would think that, yes, we could have an organizational powwow about that, but I don't know. I don't have much of an issue with taking a smart long-term approach for a team that is very much in a rebuilding phase. Let me see the kids. Let me see all the kids. Let me see all the projects. Let me see everybody from, you know, running offense through Rui for 8 games. Let me see, can he handle that? Can he be more than what I think he is, which is just a, you know, a nice player on a good team? Let me see more, you know, Troy Brown as a playmaker and Jerome Robinson getting some minutes as a 22-year-old. Let me see that. I'm perfectly fine with that because you need some guys to run with Wall and Beal.
I asked Chase Hughes, who covers the Wizards beat for NBC Sports Washington, because you and I didn't know. I said, hey, when did he hurt his shoulder? This isn't something we were plugged in on. He said it wasn't previously disclosed, and he went even further. He said the Wizards have to put out their injury report during practices. He said as of last week, midweek, there were no players limited in practice at all with any type of injuries. So I got to imagine this shoulder thing is very, very minimal, and you hope that that's the case. I mean, they certainly didn't announce it a week ago when they were going through any of the ailments players were dealing with at practice, and maybe it's just what they're going to pin the decision not to have him play on. And that's kind of what you're hoping for right now anyway. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Mike Richmond is a Redskins historian. He wrote an encyclopedia on the team. We could talk to him about the history of the Washington Redskins name, you know, what it means to the organization, and if there's anything from a historical standpoint that would make sense if they are going to pivot off of the name in the coming days or weeks. You're listening to The Fan. He's Danny. I'm Grant. You are listening to 106.7 The Fan. Welcome back. News of the day. Bradley Beal will not participate in the restart of the NBA season in Orlando. 8 games slated for the Wiz. They'll be without Wall, Beal, and Bertans. I'm still ready to watch. I think a lot of Wizards fans will still find enjoyment in those games. And as you said, Danny, let the kids run around a little bit, see what some of them have, and go into the offseason. It's almost like a glorified summer league type situation with NBA prospects.
But against good teams. And that's the thing. You're going up against quality opponents for the most part. These are the playoff teams. You're not just playing against Chicago's also-rans. These are the teams that are looking up. You're looking up at in the standings. So I'm excited to see it. I mean, I you know, they've got a bunch of sort of, you know, mismatched pieces and a bunch of kids. They're basically just throwing things at the wall and figuring out who can play, who's going to be here in a couple years. to go with their, you know, their star backcourt of Wall and Beal. And I'm excited to see that. I got no problem.
Let's go to the Mattress Warehouse hotline and welcome onto the show a buddy of mine I've known for many, many years, met in a press box at FedEx Field years ago. He's known as the Redskins historian. He wrote the Redskins Encyclopedia. Mike Richmond is with us. Mike, we've talked for years and years about the Redskins name and whether or not it would eventually and ever change. I'm just curious to get your thoughts about this last week, as it's gone from a handful of days ago people thinking, I'm not sure that that'll ever happen, to now it seems like it's imminent. And it's not a matter of if, but will it happen before the season or at the end of the season? What do you think about these last several days?
Well, when I saw the Redskins statement on Friday morning, I just said it's inevitable. I mean, at this point, when you have your major corporate sponsors pressuring you like that, seemingly you would think that the name is going to be changed. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to say Dan Snyder is definitely going to do this, that he's going to succumb to the pressure. I mean, this is going to, first of all, it's going to take some time. I don't think anything's going to happen this season. I don't think there's going to be a change that's going to be imminent this season. But, I mean, on the surface, it would look like that we're headed in that direction. Yes.
Mike, go through the history of this name, because it wasn't all, and this happens, by the way, in society. I'm not complaining about this. Things that didn't used to be offensive, we know more now. And, you know, we don't use some of the words that we used to use as society has evolved. This wasn't an offensive word, I guess, a while ago. And there were partnerships with Native American groups that sort of proved that. Can you go through some of the history?
Yeah, absolutely. The creation of this word, Redskin, in terms of the Redskins' name, there's no evidence, nothing historical that I've come across in my research tying this in with any racist intent on the part of George Preston Marshall, who founded the team, the original owner. So, you know, with the Redskins, there was no racist motive. And, I mean, going back years, from what I've learned, the use of this word in the 1700s, 1800s, it was not used in a disparaging way toward Native Americans. Well, I really think this whole thing changed. I mean, I'm going to point the finger at Hollywood. I really, you know, from what I've read, my research, I believe this is all Hollywood liberties using this term in a disparaging way in old Westerns toward Native Americans. And I think that's how the mindset basically changed. I mean, like with Susan Harjo, the woman who pushed for the Native American woman, pushed for many years for the Redskins to change their name. There has been no evidence that in real life that which she said that it had been used in a disparaging way. I mean, Ives Goddard, the famous linguist from Smithsonian, I mean, he's done research on this going back hundreds of years. I mean, he paints this in a very flattering light in terms of how it was used. I could read you a little bit. He says, when it first appeared as an English expression in the early 1800s, it came in the most respectful context at the highest level. These are white people and Indians talking together, with the white people trying to ingratiate themselves. So, I mean, that's just one example. There are many more. I mean, and you can also look at the polls. The Annenberg poll from 2004, University of Pennsylvania, the Washington Post poll from 2016. And I know these are opinion polls and they can be skewed a certain way. But still, they concluded the same thing. 90% of Native Americans are not offended by this term. So, give you another example. Well, let's talk about the Washington Redskins and how they've used this term to honor Native Americans over the years. Marshall, in the 1950s, he created these on the game program covers. He would put the pictures of famous Native Americans, legendary Native Americans. Case in point, a game in 1957, Redskins Giants game. He had Osceola, the famous Seminole chief, on the cover of that game program. Quote: tall, slender, and straight, Osceola the Seminole was noted for his bravery, personal magnetism, and cunning military strategy. I give you more anecdotes, more examples, but that is how it is basically, in a nutshell, I believe, my historical take on this.
Mike Richmond is the Redskins historian, and he wrote the book, The Redskins Encyclopedia. I want to go back, though. You don't think that this is a lock, you know, that it's a guarantee now that they change the name. I haven't really heard anyone else say that. I mean, the statement they said they got to look into this, I have a hard time believing they do that and come back and say, well, we'll keep the name. Obviously, you mentioned the investors, but now their gear is out of Walmart and Target's websites and Nike. I'm not really sure how they could keep the name, but give me a path to that potentially. Like, what would that look like, and what leads you to believe that it's not a guarantee that this is over now?
I'm just I'm trying to read into Dan Snyder's mind at this point. I can't say definitively that it's not going to be changed, obviously. I'm not saying that. But I don't think it's, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10 at this point, I'd give it like an 8 that it would be changed. That's my own opinion. Just trying to read into it, that's all.
And we don't know how Dan thinks because he doesn't ever talk to anybody. I mean, I don't know how much – did you, when you were doing all your research for the encyclopedia, did you spend any time with him? Have you ever talked to him or any of the high-ranking officials about – you know, their thoughts on the name?
I've never had any direct conversations with Dan Snyder or anybody at Redskin Park that I can think of on the name itself. But no, I have no inside sources on this, but either now or in the past. But let me just give you another historical note here. I had a conversation a few years ago with a man named Tim Ames. He's the at the time he was the superintendent of schools. He may still be on the in the Wellpinit School District, part of the Spokane Tribe in Washington State. And the name of the high school is the Redskins. That is there, and many other native on Indian reservations in the country, they have the names of their schools Redskins. Now, I know many schools have changed that name as well, okay, and not only on reservations, but beyond that, high schools and other segments of the United States. I mean, they've changed their names given all of the pressure. But I want to read you a little bit what this man said to me. I mean, it's very enlightening, fascinating. Our mascot is a warrior. He's dressed in battle gear. He's very powerful, looking very strong. So that's our mascot, a strong warrior man, and he's a Redskin. Okay, so another historical bit of this, another historical context. And in terms of, though, the thinking, I'll get back to your initial question, the thinking of the Redskins, all I can say is that my own feeling is that it's just not a given. I would lean in that direction, but.
No, I appreciate it, man. Thank you so much, Mike, for joining us, man. Really appreciate the time today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much for having me on.
Thank you, buddy.
And be well. Mike Richmond, and again, it's the Redskins Encyclopedia. It came out several years ago, and he is a historian who dedicates a lot of time to looking up the team's past. So I thought it'd be an interesting perspective as we have guests on who we'll talk about the name changing. You could tell he, you know, has never really thought the team, purposefully or otherwise, found this to be offensive. But I'm not sure that is the story anymore or how much that matters at this point. It certainly seems like it is changing, whether they meant any offense or not. But we appreciate Mike for his time. RedskinsHistorian.com is where you can find some of his work. Grant and Danny on the Fan, our double play is next. It is time for our double play. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports. Danny, yesterday I had one of those moments where you go, okay, I'm on vacation. This is a thing now. I was at the Peach Beach Shave Ice Shack. Basically, okay. It was super hot. I'm riding around in a golf cart because we drive a golf cart around this little town. And so I've got the wife and the baby in the golf cart. We're sweating. It's gross hot outside. We're just basically trying to pass some time to get closer to bedtime for the baby, essentially.
Oh, yes.
And we see this little shack. You check it out on my Instagram. It's kind of funny. It's a cute little place. It's called the Shave Ice Shack. So we go there, and they just give you a massive heaping pile of shaved ice with whatever juice taste you want shot on top of it. So I got a watermelon. Allison got strawberry. The baby got banana. And we went on our way. But that was like the, wow, this is vacation kind of moment. What is that for you? Is it your toes in the sand? Is it getting into the ocean? Like, what is your
question?
I just got smacked in the face that I'm on vacation moment?
That is a great question by you. So in normal times, it's when I get to eat at High Cotton Barbecue down in the Outer Banks. I don't have to worry about anything. They're so nice, and they give me so much tea, and I ask for the dinner menu, even if it's lunchtime, and I get the 3-meat platter and a couple different sides, and it just feels like a vacation to me. Like I can kickstart my fattiness on my vacation.
Sometimes are you going to the OBX next week, or are you going somewhere else?
I'm going Friday. Yeah, we're going Friday.
So will you be there? You said normal times. Are they not open or something?
No, they are, but you're not sitting down inside and eating at this point, probably. You know, like maybe you can get the carry out, but that experience of sitting down and everything is so relaxed and everybody's so friendly and it's so wonderful. This is not normal, you know. I'll probably get carry out or something like that. But it may be that it may be the first time the toes hit the sand and I set the umbrella up and I sit down and start reading a book and nobody bothers me for a little bit. It might be that, but it can be any and all those things. It could be the first time Duck Donuts comes and then everybody else has a normal amount and I keep walking past the thing and I eat five. And I can't believe anyone's leaving donuts to be eaten, so I feel like I should do a public service and keep eating the donuts because we don't want to waste the donuts. But any of those things, man, I love those little feelings, those little things that are just for you. Now it's my vacation, you know? For like some people, it's like, oh, this alcoholic beverage. That's cool. I don't even need that. I don't necessarily need anything like that. Give me some food with sugar and carbs and let me sit my fat butt down.
Yeah, I'll take any of that at any time on my vacay as well. I mean, just being driving around in a golf cart with all the little shops. There's a little store called the Gull Hummock where you go in and people all get their peanuts or their pints of ice cream or whatever. I would say it's kind of like the Chad's spot, like the Commonwealth Dry Goods of the little Cape Charles strip here. You know, you go get your little snacks and things that you want for the day. You got a little bakery, a little candy store, all kind of side by side. It's like Old Town Leesburg or something. But it's neat, just kind of whipping around in the golf cart, not having to drive your car for days on end. Because there's nothing far enough away that you're driving to that mm-hmm. you need.
It's all right.
Went
there.
To a little brewery yesterday with a bunch of outdoor spaced out seating, and we bumped into some people from Northern Virginia, from Arlington and D.C., which was kind of cool. All right, that's my double play. Let's see what Danny's got in the chamber.
I'll do this quickly. Thommy needs to get out the board. Thommy needs to get out the board of odds of who is going to be making noise on this radio program. So the floodgates have opened. It's only a matter of time. The untenable situation that is my two kids at home for extended periods of time is, you know, has reached a boiling point. It's reached a head. My wife has a legitimate job, and she's got to be on the phone. She's got to have conference calls. They're doing video teams, conferences, constantly stuff like this. And the amount of amusement that you can get out of just handing one of the young kids a device is running thin, and it's becoming more and more of a challenge. So we have opened up the downstairs floor. I'm only separated down by one door, and they are outside this door in the TV room right now watching, I believe it's a Lego Batman movie. Matter of time. You're going to hear from my children, and this is not just today. This is now going forward. We've begrudgingly finally allowed this to take place where they can make some amount of noise, and it won't get on air. There's going to be a lot of noise, and it's going to get on air at some point. So we need to update the odds. We need to change that board.
You're saying this is not short term. This is permanent. They're just going to be there now.
Yeah, once we've opened up the floodgates to allow this to happen, you can't walk it back. Once you allow the 2-year-old new space, he's going to want to explore the space.
Well, change the odds then, Thommy. We'll have to get an updated board from him a little bit later on.
To get
by the
board
way,
updated.
How about this Comrex unit? Still broadcast.
I can't believe
halfway through show number 2. The equipment that won't die. The Beltway Blitz.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai,
There's joy in every journey.